Sunset Lake CBD is a majority employee-owned hemp farm located right outside of Burlington, Vermont. Before they started growing hemp, Sunset Lake Farms produced cream for Ben & Jerry's. Sunset Lake CBD doesn't use any pesticides or herbicides to grow any of its hemp plants, and they use organic fertilizer and other sustainable farming techniques to ensure the long-term health of the soil and to minimize their carbon footprint. So like all of us, my days are really stressful. By the end of the night, my kids are in bed, I'm taking a minute to chill, but I'm still unwinding. I recently started using the Relax Gummies infused with CBD isolate, reishi mushroom extract, and ashwagandha root extract. I'm really glad I tried these because they really helped me get ready for a good night of sleep, and I really think I sleep better, so I'd highly recommend it. So check out Sunset Lake CBD today at sunsetlakecbd.com and use the code HFPOD for 20% off your order. That's sunsetlakecbd.com and use the code HFPOD for 20% off your order. Farmer owned, Vermont grown, Sunset Lake CBD.
Hey everyone, it's Cam Hurt, host of the Best Show Ever podcast, and we have got a second season coming out very soon that I am very excited about. Got some very cool special guests, including musical acts that we all love, like Karina Reichman, Daniel Donato, Jake Brownstein from Eggy, Rick and Peter from Goose, and many more. Tune in for new episodes dropping on Osiris Media March 5th on the Best Show Ever podcast.
Hey, listeners, I want to tell you about a sponsor, Music Masters Collective. They're a nonprofit organization that produces unique music events, providing opportunities for fans and artists to meet and collaborate in an inspired and creative atmosphere. Every week, they host different events, all with the opportunity to learn from world-class musicians like Oteil Burbridge, Trouble No More, former members of The Band, Milk Carton Kids, Nikki Glaspie, Bill Frisell, Sean Colvin, and many more. This June, join the Fab Four, Joan Osborne, John Sebastian, Marshall Crenshaw, and a great group of faculty for the debut of Magical Mystery Camp. This all-inclusive, once-in-a-lifetime music vacation experience in the heart of the Catskills will be packed with nightly performances, workshops, speakers, song circles, open mics, and a lot more. If you're a performing musician at any level, bring your instrument. If you're a music lover, bring your good spirit. It's an amazing experience for individuals, friends, and couples alike. Registration is open, spots are filling up, so check it out soon. And scholarships are available. Check out magicalmysterycamp.com/helpingfriendly to learn more.
This is Mike Ganser from Aqueous, and this podcast is In the Loop, the Legion of Osiris Podcasts. Osiris connects you with podcasts, videos, and live experiences about the artists and topics you love. Visit osirispod.com to check out our shows. Osiris works in partnership with Jambase, which connects music fans with the music they love and empowers them to go see live music. Check them out at jambase.com.
Hey everybody, this is the Helping Friendly Podcast. I'm here in Washington, D.C. with a special guest who is visiting us from far away in the South.
That's where we all come from.
This is Harvey, who's the co-host of Bluest Tape, one of the Osiris Network's podcasts and a podcast that focuses on widespread panic. What's up, man?
Hey, thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for coming. This we are doing a crossover episode where I was just a guest on Bluest Tape, which people can check out if they want to hear me try to explain widespread panic and what I heard. And Harvey is going to talk about, we're going to talk about fish with Harvey here. And we just realized that last year we went to a show here in D.C., the Golden Gate Wingmen, mm-hmm. and it was like 2 days to the...
Yeah, it was the same week.
Same week.
Yeah.
Because you're here for the same event
right.
every year. Yep. So good to have you back.
Yeah.
And now we're actually doing podcasts instead of just going to see music.
I don't know what I'd rather do, but
right. So what we're doing here is we've each suggested three shows to each other. So on Bluest Tape, we talked about three shows that Harvey recommended, widespread shows, which I had a really good time listening to. So now we're going to talk about the three shows that I recommended to Harvey in terms of fish, and people are going to People are going to tell me that I picked the wrong shows, and they're going to tell me that I should have.
Is Fish Twitter a thing?
Fish Twitter's a thing. You know it is. I'm going to get.
I've seen touches of it, and I'm really quite concerned about what's going to happen after this podcast. What I'm going to get.
What's really great is we have listeners who are not at all worried about, you know, sending us their opinions, which we like when they do. So we did. Well, we'll talk about the shows in a little while because I'm curious what people think, how my choices were. But like you, I'm sure you. Like you said, it's hard to choose three shows from across a 30-year career of a band. So
yeah, but I'll give you mad props because I feel like you did a really good job.
Oh,
of. I mean, I have no idea. Like maybe you made the wrong choices, but as far as like what my experience of being able to hear, you know, different eras and sounds, it was cool.
Cool. So before we get into it, tell our listeners a little bit about Bluest Tape and how that project came to be.
Me and my buddy Jeff Kolath from, we used to go see Panic show. Well, I guess we still do, but, we would go see Panic shows together, back in the late 90s. And, we met, I think on the internet, like on AOL Instant Messenger, like actually on AOL, like, you know, the Instant Messenger inside the app of AOL. That was a thing.
We needed to start it up. Yeah.
And then just, you know, started chatting, and then it got to the point where we would talk every couple of weeks and just talk about like what we had been listening to, often Panic, but not always, but it was like, oh, did you hear the show from, you know, I found this show from, you know, summer 96 and it's, you haven't heard this one before or whatever. And then we just decided we would start to record those things, those conversations. And it's been a really good exercise in, discovering, I mean, the great thing about these bands, Fish and Widespread Panic and the Grateful Dead, is that the archive of live recordings that's available to us is, you know, pretty much endless, right? I mean, yeah. You know, maybe you could listen to everyone, but that would take a long time.
I find it really challenging. I mean, even with Fish, you know, who has not, you know, I don't know. It's really hard.
Yeah, and so this was like an entry point. Right. Like, yeah. So let's figure out ways to discover. And I mean, I've listened to more shows in the last 2 years that I hadn't ever heard. I mean, because I would always just go back to the ones that I knew. Right. You know that these are great shows and like, you know, and so it's good to kind of get out of your comfort zone and listen to some show that you would never otherwise listen to. And you find a sort of like moment of magic. Right. And so that's been the main, you know, reason for it, and we've had a lot of fun. I hope that the people that have listened have too.
Yeah, it's cool. I mean, and it's like a little bit similar to what we do with HF Pod. It's like challenging ourselves to go outside of our own comfort zones, right? So it's not just like going back to the same shows you've always listened to. Did you, before we get into the shows, did you have any history with Fish? Like, have you seen Fish? What's your sort of background with
how is the band spelled? No. Okay.
That's a good place to start.
So my history with Fish. I'll go way back. My older sister, I have an older sister who went to the University of Georgia. She was there from 91 to 94, I think. And so she introduced me to a lot of good music. And she would come... I mean, she introduced me. Obviously, Widespread Panic was a big, thing in Athens in the early 90s. And, my first notes of Widespread Panic that I heard was, you know, the Mom's Kitchen CD that my sister brought home from college. She also brought home a cassette of Dave Matthews Band, Remember Two Things, in like the fall of 93 that like nobody had ever heard of this band before. And it was like, this is amazing.
Yeah.
Like it felt like you were just like happened upon this treasure. You know what I mean?
That's so and, cool. How much older was she?
So she's 3.5 years older.
Okay.
And so I don't think she brought home the Fish, but I owned Rift. And I think I just went to the record store and was, I don't know if I like asked them for, you know, like, here's what I'm into. I think I just like, it's one of those things where you just like pick up the tape and you're like, huh, this looks interesting.
Yeah.
And then, you know, maybe, I don't know, but I had Rift on cassette in, you know, when it was the newest Fish album. So I don't know, did it come out in 93, 92?
Yeah, 90, 93.
Okay. So this was probably summer 93. It might have been like, you know, because I was, my first Panic show was Horde 93. And so that may have, actually, that might have been the genesis, was like getting into Horde, knowing that Fish was, you know, in Horde the year before. And
yeah.
Like, maybe I'd check those guys out.
Yep.
And so I had Rift, and I mean, to be honest, I wore the fuck out of that tape. Mm-hmm. I still, to this day, love Rift. It is a great
really
album.
Good. It's my favorite. It's my favorite Fish album.
Oh,
for sure.
So great taste.
Yeah, great apparently. Taste. Except for the people who listen to this podcast who think I have terrible taste. So.
So I listened to Rift. Now, I mean, to be honest, I did think of them as, you know, it was different, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it was like, I wouldn't say it's like it was a joke band, but I mean, they did weird things, right? And that was cool, but it definitely wasn't like, I guess I kind of put them in a slightly separate class of like the other bands, you know, Blues Traveler or Watch for Panic or the other bands that I was listening to, but I still listened to the hell out of it.
Yep.
So listen to that. You know, I started college in the fall of 94. When did Hoist come out?
Around 94.
Then. Yep. Yeah. So Ain't Life Grand, Widespread Panic's Ain't Life Grand, and Fish's Hoist both came out around the same time in 94, my freshman year in college. And, you know, everybody had it.
Yeah.
And I love that album. Mm-hmm. I mean, I still, you know, I'll put that on. I don't know. Is that a hot take around here?
Yeah, no, I think it's
okay.
Good.
Okay. All right.
I think a lot of people, you know, a lot of people don't listen to any Fish albums at all.
Oh, really?
So I think, you know, like if you haven't listened to Hoist in a while, you should go back and listen to it.
And I mean, that's one of those where like, I won't listen to it for a couple years and I'll put it on and I'll be like, damn, this is really good.
Yeah.
So I had that. So I was, you know, I was a pretty decent Fish fan. You know, I had never seen them live.
Yeah.
But they didn't really come down to New Orleans much. I don't know that they ever played down there when I was in high school.
Yeah, they might not have.
You know, in the early to mid-90s.
It's interesting. I feel like there's a couple shows from 92, 93, but I'd have to look them up, which I will do eventually.
Okay. Yeah. So anyway, but I felt like I didn't have many opportunities.
Yep.
So my first and only Fish show was Deer Creek in 1996.
Okay.
813.
Yeah.
Sorry.
813. Yep.
Okay. Divided Sky opener.
Yeah.
And it was a great show.
That's cool.
I had a really good time.
That's a really good place to start.
Yeah.
For sure.
And I mean, it was a 2-night run, right? I think I saw the second night.
Yeah. Yeah. 812 and 813. Yep.
Summer 96 was like prime concert going for me. I saw Allman Brothers that summer, saw Panic a bunch, saw Fish. That was a good time in my life. but I will say, I was not a huge fan of the everything outside of the concert at Deer Creek in 96.
Yep.
And I always have chalked it up to the fact that that was the first summer without Garcia and that Fish got all of the trash from the dead. I don't know if that's true, but Panic wasn't big enough to take much of it on at that point.
Yeah, I think was a lot. That
Fish got a lot of it, and that just kind of turned me off.
Yep.
And it really wasn't anything to do with the show. It was just like, these are not the people that I want to hang out with.
Mm-hmm.
And that sounds terrible as it comes out of my mouth. I don't mean that to the people that are listening.
Yeah.
You guys are all really good people. But
you were just not, you were just turned off by the scene.
And it was like, I mean,
got much bigger then too.
Yeah, yeah. And it's like, if I have a finite number of concerts to go to in my life, this is not.
Yeah.
I'm going to go follow Panic around, or I'm going to go see whoever else.
Yep.
This wasn't my scene. So, I still would listen to it. I think part of it too, and God, I mean, I hope none of these people are listening. They might be. But some of like my college friends that were huge Fish fans.
Mm-hmm.
And like Fall 95 was a big, they played up in at the Louisville Gardens.
Yep.
10/29/95. Is that right?
I think that's right.
I have things in there.
This is good.
That was right before the Rosemont Horizon show.
It was.
and a bunch of people went to that. I used to listen to those tapes. But the people that like I hung around with that were Fish fans were generally kind of dicks about being Fish fans.
Mm.
And, you know, and it wasn't like, I don't want to get into this
because
I don't think it's a real thing. But that was just like, that was another reason to not like kind of go.
Yeah.
You know, and so I still would listen to it. And I still to this day listen to them every once in a while. But I definitely appreciated the stuff that you sent me and that, you know, that's a good entry point for me to get back into it.
Yeah. But, well, that,
does that answer the question?
Yeah, that does. That 1396 show is, you know, recognized as a very good show. So Fish.net has show ratings that are out of 5, and that show is 4.58 out of 5. So
is
like
pretty good?
Very highly rated, and yeah. It was also officially released by the band as in the Live Fish series. So,
and I think I bought those CDs at Best Buy.
Yeah, the Mike song in there is a real masterpiece. So if anyone hasn't heard that, they should go back to 81396. So that's cool. That's your only.
My only fish
crazy,
show.
Only fish show. Right. So I
can you believe that? I mean, it's like that I'm still alive. That I'm
yeah,
on fish
I mean,
ones.
Exactly, right?
That's, and by the way, I'm on Twitter. I'm at Row J. So if you need.
that's really not nice. sending people to Jonathan. Okay, so one thing that we didn't talk about on Blues Tape, we talked about a lot and a lot of the similarities in the career arcs of Fish and Widespread Panic. We didn't talk a ton about the influences, which I think we should.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Because
it's good.
It seems like the Grateful Dead is maybe like the easiest.
It's the middle of the Venn diagram.
Exactly. Mm. But there's so much else. I mean, there's the Allman Brothers on the like, and then there's a lot of classic rock, I'm sure. And then there's just like the Colonel Bruce and all that.
Well, that's
right?
Probably the biggest part of the Venn diagram, right?
Yeah.
I mean, Colonel Bruce was, and I didn't know that Bruce was such a big influence on Fish really until he died. And I started hearing stuff from Fish people about his influence. I mean, obviously he was, you know, as JB said in at New Year's 96, our mother and daddy and soul savior, Mr. Bruce Hampton. And, you know, he was a big part of them, you know, the Zambi, you know, and really, I think, I mean, if you ask them to a man, they would say that was their biggest influence.
Yeah. What do you think it was about Bruce Hampton? Cause I've heard John Fishman particularly talk about it, but yeah. I think Trey and Mike and all of them.
Yeah. We did a whole episode on the Blues Tape about Bruce. And, I would encourage you to listen to it cause we had Jeff Hansen on. I had some really good insight on Bruce, but it's nice. it's about playing with intention. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like playing for 10 people as if they were 10,000 and just, you know, when in doubt, go completely out, mm-hmm. you know, and don't hold back and don't think about it. Just play, mm-hmm. you know? And, I know that's how he impacted Panic. I can only, you know, assume that's
yeah.
the same
yeah.
as Fish, right?
Yeah, and I think Fish got a little bit more of the, well, they already had sort of the wackiness
yeah.
aspect.
Yeah, right? And that was right. And so I think that, you know, Panic probably got a little bit of that from him.
Yeah.
And I don't know when, I mean, it would be great if you could, you know, call up Trey and we could
yeah.
ask him, but
call him.
I don't know if, I mean, I would assume that the Panic's relationship with Bruce predates Fish's, and maybe there was even like maybe even Panic introduced.
Yeah.
I don't know what that entry point was.
Yeah, because they were coming down there, like
right?
Because
I mean, he was in Atlanta, right? In '89 and '90, and that's when you know the band, you know, sort of. So anyway, that
that's a huge overlap for sure, and the Dead and the Allman Brothers, of course. Mm. What else do you think is like in there? I mean, I feel like classic rock is just like a little bit abstract, but
yeah,
it is
yeah.
there, right?
Right. I mean, I think what to me, what makes Panic so interesting, is, yeah, they're a six-headed monster that, you know, runs in tandem, and it's not about, you know, solos, you know, in different stanzas of a song, right? Mm-hmm. It's about like building up to a single thing mm-hmm. as a, you know, as an entity. And to that end, I think each member brings their own, you know, they've all, I think, got their own influences, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, Michael Hauser was a big like metalhead,
mm-hmm.
you know, and so he got some of that, but he also was really into prog rock, and so like Yes and stuff like that,
which also really influenced Trey,
right?
Yeah,
and you know, which is interesting because they sound very different, but
yeah.
that they do have like those common influences,
yeah.
You know, John Bell was, you know, Cat Stevens, you know, Michael Stanley is a guy from Cleveland, mm-hmm. and Van Morrison, you know, so more sort of singer-songwriter.
Yeah.
Dave Schools was a big Deadhead. You know, so, and JoJo Herman brings that sort of, that New Orleans, like, ragtime,
mm-hmm.
Professor Longhair, which I'm not sure if Trey does much of that kind of, you know, barroom piano type.
Yeah, not really. I mean, Paige, the, you know, who plays keys and piano, he was influenced by a lot of jazz, but but I don't think like the Panic guys.
Yeah. So, so that's all of that stuff sort of gumbo mixed up, you know, and that's why I think New Orleans is such a big part of that band, is because New Orleans is, you know, takes from all these different, you know, styles, and that's, you know, that's what a gumbo is, right?
Yeah.
Just kind of mixing up all kinds of things.
Yeah. And we talked about on Bluest Tape, like the, it was harder for Fish to get south from Burlington to play shows in different cities, whereas for Panic it was probably easier to just
get on the road,
get on the road and go drive to New Orleans or go up to South Carolina
or
North Carolina.
Or,
yeah,
you know, I mean, just getting all those different things.
Because I was just looking back at the dates. So Fish played at Tips, fall of 90, spring of 91, fall of 91, spring of 93. Which I've been to Tipitina's a lot, and I can't imagine
Seeing fish there. Yeah.
I mean, obviously different time. But.
Right. Panic played there a bunch, but summer 96 was the last time they played two nights there. And apparently it was, you know, I mean, the shows are fantastic, but that was still before Tips had air conditioning.
Oh, okay.
And so you're late June in New Orleans and it's packed. And I couldn't even imagine how fucking hot that place was.
I was there for a jazz fest. I mean, I've been to like six or seven jazz fests, but one that I went to where we were waiting for, like, I feel like it was like Michael Franti and someone else to play a late night there. You know, it was like 2 a.m. and they were going to start at 3. And it was packed and it was hot. And the show hadn't started and it was like 3 o'clock. What am I doing here? But it's a classic place. So Harvey, before we get into some of these shows, did you think about going again, like after 96? Or did it just not really cross your radar?
So, no, I mean, I think I definitely did consider it, you know what I mean? And I will say that, so Fish played at Rupp in Lexington, which is where I went to college and I live outside of still, in November of 11/7/96.
Look at you.
I mean, dropping all kinds of dates. Come on.
You can be our stats guy.
Awesome. I know.
That's a great, great show. Great show.
So I didn't go to that out of protest because... No, I'm just kidding. all of the people I knew went to that show, including my wife before we met.
Mm-hmm.
She, not a fan of the vacuum. Mm-hmm. So that was what song is that?
Or, I think that in Rupp it's Bike.
Okay. Yeah. So yeah, she's not a fan of that. but that same night, at the Kentucky Theater, right down the road from Rupp Arena, Bela Fleck and the Flecktones played.
Okay.
And so about like eight, you know, of like my Panic running buddies went to go see Bela Fleck instead of Fish that night.
Wow.
And it was a great show.
Yeah, I'm sure.
I mean, I do have a little bit of regret that I didn't go to that Rupp show, but I was perfectly happy to go see Bela. And, you know, at that point I was pretty much committed to Panic and not like I had to choose one or the other, right. But that was like, if I had money and time, I was going to see Panic. I wasn't going to see Fish.
Yeah. And we talked on Bluest Tape about 96, spring of 96, and I mean a lot in 96. You saw a lot of Panic shows in
96. 96, 97, so, 98. Those were sort of my prime years.
Yeah.
And that's when Fish was playing around a lot, and I just didn't go.
Yeah.
And at the point where I stopped seeing Panic a bunch, you know, which would have been like 03, I mean, and then, you know, Fish took breaks too, right?
Yeah.
I mean, so there are times that they just weren't around.
Yeah.
And then when they did, I was like, you know, my life had changed.
Yeah.
You know, I got married and I had a real job and, you know, it just wasn't as big a thing.
Yeah.
And I got into different music. And
so,
but that being said, I would totally go see Fish if they played somewhere close.
Okay. We'll do it. Okay. We'll make it happen.
All right.
We'll go to Cincinnati or something.
Yeah. I would mark it down. If Fish plays in Cincinnati and I'm not working and we can get a babysitter, I'll go see him.
Okay. So we're going to talk a little bit about the shows that I recommended for Harvey. And for those of you listening who want to tell me what I should have recommended instead, you can
do
that.
Did you ask?
I didn't. I should have. I asked our co-hosts and they gave some input. But so I think the biggest criticism is that I didn't give you anything from 95. But I couldn't.
Yeah, I was kind of. But I will say, I'm probably as familiar with 95 as any years of Fish.
I just couldn't.
95 and 96 were probably the years I listened to the most.
Good.
Just because that's when people were around that were listening to that stuff. And I knew that Louisville Garden Show real well. Mm-hmm. I knew the Halloween 95. I knew the Halloween 96. You know, I had all the Red Rock shows from 96.
Yeah.
Deer Creek. I mean, so that was, you know, that was the time that I was listening to him. So I'm kind of excited that I got into different eras.
Cool. And I think Summer 95 is like a different psychedelic abyss that we can dive into another time.
Probably not interested.
So the shows that we're going to talk about are 416-92, which I chose because it's one of the first, maybe the first like bootleg CD I ever had. And it's a soundboard and it comes from this like very prolific time in the band's history.
Is it like bootleg CD, like one that you bought for $60 at a... Yeah, one of those record stores. I mean, like, not like that one would buy.
Yeah, exactly. You know? Yeah. Yeah. With like a
import
different
thing.
Yeah. With a different cover.
Or the title's all
title.
Fucked up.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, yeah. So we're going to talk about that. Then we're going to talk about 11/17/97, which is probably my most revisited Fish show over the years. And then we're going to talk about the jam filled night from the Baker's Dozen, 7/25/17. So, I mean, maybe we should start with the 92 show and just see, did this sound like.
Do you know who opened for Fish that night?
I don't.
A Widespread Panic.
Did they really?
Yeah.
I did not even know that.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
So they did the night before at in LA, 4:15,
okay.
Panic opened for Fish, and then the night after at the Warfield, Panic opened for Fish.
That's amazing. So they're but not a lot of like not a lot of crossover in the music. Like no guesting, right?
No.
Yeah.
So the first time that Fish appeared on stage with Panic was 11/11/93.
Okay.
At the Roxy in LA. The whole encore had Trey and Paige, which is actually fantastic playing. So okay. You'll have to listen to
All right. We'll link to that 11/11/93.
Yep.
So I had no idea. So they were, it's crazy though that they were, I mean, we talked
it was like
about it.
They were, I mean, obviously Fish was on tour and Panic was on tour. So it was just like they picked those three shows to, you know, hit together.
Yeah, because it wasn't the full tour.
No. And in fact, Panic, you know, was doing two sets every night except those three and doing that opening set.
Interesting.
So, yeah.
So what did you think of that show? Any like highlights or anything that you found interesting or not interesting particularly?
Okay. So I will say, I mean, this is a good entry point for me because I've got some Rift stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so this is more of that era that I'm into.
Yep.
So here, I'm just going to kind of run through some of the notes that I took down.
Yeah.
So Buried Alive, I heard some ARU stuff in there, like in a good way.
Mm-hmm.
So that was cool. The Possum was really good up until about 8 minutes in, and I wrote down Wankfest. But the first 8 minutes were great. And so please, again, you know, at Roj, if you have any problems with my my takes, but. So that's sort of like, that's where I get, I have a hard time sometimes.
Yeah.
Just like the, you know.
I think that's normal.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
And then let's see. It's Ice. I really liked that. It seemed like a pretty tight jam. Like, and I did. So is that normal? Like, or was that more of like that era and now it's not as much?
No, it is. That when they play that song, it is pretty, it's pretty tight. Like it sticks to the composed part, but with like a little bit of a jam in there in the middle.
So that's, I mean, I think that's more of the kind of thing that I like, mm-hmm. right? And again, mm-hmm. like, I can't remember if we talked about this, but, you know, song oriented jams, mm-hmm. right? Like mm-hmm. where it's, you know, take it out if you need to, but we're in the context of the song, right? We're not just, it's not like, you know, we're not just playing jazz here, right?
Yeah. That's going to be different for those other shows.
Yeah, so yeah. We'll get there. I got good stuff too. So the riff was really good. Okay, I have a question.
Yeah.
Bouncing around the room. Mm-hmm. Where are we? What's Fish Twitter on bouncing around the room?
Everything's good. I think it's like, I think it's a very...
People are cool. Song. It's not like...
Yeah, it's. I think back in the day, I think it was funny, like you were describing friends who were like, you know, thought they were really cool to be Fish fans. I think back in those days of like where you... Like people were too cool for bouncing around.
Okay, yeah.
But I think everyone's sort of come back around. I think Tom thinks that it's one of the best songs that he and Trey.
I mean, I think it's a fantastic song, and I mean, I think it's great. So I just was curious.
Yeah.
What about like so? Where I put a comparison to was there's a song that Panic did called Coconut, mm-hmm. which was like their first hit, mm-hmm. like college hit, mm-hmm. right? And mm-hmm. it was, and so they stopped playing it. Mm. In like 1993, because that's all people would request mm-hmm. at shows, and they're like, "Yeah, no, we're not the band that plays Coconut, right?"
Right.
And so they would only play it at Halloween. That was the only time they would play it. Huh. From like 92 to 97, mm-hmm. they didn't play it except on Halloween.
Interesting.
And now it's back in like regular rotation, uh-huh. and it's a fun song. Yep. But it was just like we need a break.
Yeah, they need a break. Right.
So I didn't know if Bouncin' was like that.
No, that never really left the rotation. It's always been sort of in the rotation and fairly prominent.
Okay.
But it's a good question because I think it gets a bad rep. But
yeah.
I think it's like come around now to where people are okay with it again.
Okay. The Fee Maze is really good.
That's a good combination.
Yeah, I like that. And that was the first like segue from the show, mm-hmm. but like that was good. Yeah. I was happy to see that. The rest of the set I'm not so much into.
Yeah.
Is this Gamehenge?
Yeah, it's sort of Gamehenge, with the narration and
It's just no. What's funny is so first like the Colonel Forvin, I just was like kind of bored, but I was listening to this. So I usually get home before my wife. And so I listened to the first part of this at work, and I got home and like put it on the speakers at the house. It was like getting dinner ready. And she is actually way harsher on Fish than I am. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm cool with Fish. Mm-hmm. Like, as long as mm-hmm. you guys are cool with me, I'm cool with you. But my wife is like, it was a fucking vacuum, man. Yeah. Like it was like, she was scarred mm-hmm. from the vacuum.
And this has a vacuum later too. So.
Yeah. Yeah. And, so of course she walked into the house during, you know, Ichilus or whatever. And she's like, what are you listening to? What are you doing? Why are you listening to this?
You're like, so it's a special project.
Right. And she was like, okay, well put it on your, put your damn AirPods in. And you know,
that's awesome.
So,
okay. So, well, I just want to say the end of the set there's the Run Like an Antelope, which is like a very standard set closer in this era with like very fast guitar solo. Mm-hmm. Like it's sort of like the intense build up to the end. One of the highlights of this show for me. But let's I like this. This is fun.
Okay, cool. I'm not being too harsh.
No,
am I?
No,
okay.
This is all good. Right. I like getting the perspective.
So I don't have as many notes for the second set.
Yeah,
I think I enjoyed it. I mean, I really like, these are a lot of songs that I like. Mm-hmm. I saw Lizards at Deer Creek. I like that song. Mike's Sweet Capog is really good. I had always seen I Am Hydrogen on set list, but I don't know that I'd ever actually listened to it before. And it's cool,
it's
right?
It's a really beautiful little piece. Yeah.
Do they play that often?
Yes. It used to be that for many years, it was like Mike's Hydrogen, Sweet Capog, the three of them together.
Right.
And then it veered off where Hydrogen became
its own thing.
Yeah. It became less common.
Oh, okay.
So it'd be Mike's, then something, then Sweet Capog.
Yeah.
Which is now like you'll hear Hydrogen more frequently, but yeah, there was a break for sure. Cool.
And then again, these are all songs that I like, from Rift era.
Yeah.
And, so then, Terrapin, what WTF is that? Is what I wrote down.
So that's just like, you know, That's just a Fishman song
okay.
that he sings, and then he gets, you know.
Is it like In This Cold as Ice? Is that like?
Yeah. So
does he sing all the covers? Is that
no,
like okay? Because
no.
it feels like that.
Yeah. So Cold as Ice and Hold Your Head Up are the two
okay.
songs that they play before.
And
they
after
don't play
Terrapin.
Before the vacuum solo. So. So Hold Your Head Up, basically the story is that Fishman, it's like the song that Fishman hated the most of like any song was Hold Your Head Up.
So he sings it out of spite?
No, they would play it and then he would come up and sing a different song and do the vacuum solo. So he doesn't sing Hold Your Head Up. It's just like, it's the song that means that he's about to play the vacuum.
Okay.
And then if he's going to play the vacuum, it's either like Terrapin or Bike or, you know.
Okay.
A couple others.
All right, that almost makes sense.
Yeah, it's wild. I mean, I don't love the vacuum either. You know, it's just part of the deal.
It's
like
part of the show. I mean,
I don't need
it's,
to go. I don't need to see him. Do
it's kind of like you're not making playlists of Drum Space. You're not making playlists out of vacuum solos.
Exactly
right.
Okay. Well, and I don't like it. Doesn't happen that often anymore. So,
yeah.
And then you get like a whole acapella.
Yeah, and so I was gonna say that was pretty cool-ish.
So that's kind of a unique part of a show, or maybe something you didn't expect to hear.
Right. Now, I guess I wasn't surprised, but I never really heard any of that. And so that was, I enjoyed that. That was some cool stuff.
Yeah.
Sure.
And they just started doing that. Like the, you know, in
was
this
that this era kind of?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And I think they actually started paying attention to their singing. Like there was a long time where they just would.
Yeah. Just
sing, right. You know, and really concentrate on playing their instruments as, you know.
Yeah. And then,
possible.
And then, okay, so then let me ask you this.
Yep.
What does it say about me that Susie Greenberg is one of my favorite Fish songs?
Good. It's awesome.
Is that good?
Yeah, it's
okay,
awesome.
All right, cool.
Yeah.
All right.
It's a rocking closer.
Sure.
And yeah, this especially in this era, like that's a great, great rocking closer.
Okay.
So I approve of that.
All right. Oh, cool, man. All right. Well, yeah, so that's what I got for this 92 show. I enjoyed this.
Okay.
I would, I don't know, should I rank the three?
Yeah.
Do we want to do it at the end, or you want me to tell you?
Let's do it at the end. I want to hear, let's go to the 97.
I think it'll be
show.
Pretty obvious by the time that we get done.
I'm sure. So the reason that I chose this 11/17/97 show is that, to me, this is one of the best first sets, I think, that Fish has ever played, and also just one of the best like representations of what was going on in 97 playing, which is like, as I mentioned in the notes, like sort of a combination of funk, but also just this, like it became much more atmospheric, much more exploratory, mm-hmm. which I'm mm-hmm. sure that you heard right
mm-hmm.
away.
Mm-hmm.
Did you catch that? Like, right. You know,
yeah.
Right into the 17-minute and 52-second.
Yes.
Opener.
So I like the Tweezer. I generally like Tweezer. I feel like it's, again, I think even though they get out there on jams,
mm-hmm.
I think most of the time they're still sort of in the context of the song, right?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's just a long song. It's
kind
of like You Enjoy Myself, right?
Yep.
Like they have these big jams, but it's still just because the song's very long.
Mm-hmm.
So I enjoyed that. Reba, I was good until about 5 minutes in.
Okay.
And then I got lost.
Did you get brought back in during like the, after the...
Okay, so...
Yeah.
So not interested in the dissonance.
Yeah.
Just basically, uh-huh. you know, but... Then they sort of went into a mellow jam after that, which wasn't too bad.
Yeah.
But again, like, to me, it felt like unrelated to the song, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so maybe that's just not knowing it well enough to know that, like, to look for that or, you know, or to be excited about that or whatever.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Just listening to it as a virgin.
No, I think that's fair. It's not really related. So, like, the part you're talking about with the dissonance, there's, like, the prog rock sort of composition.
Uh-huh.
And then it just ends, and then it goes into a really mellow, awesome jam.
Yeah, yeah. So that part I was cool with.
Yeah, that's fair.
My question, though, and what seemed like a missed opportunity was, mm-hmm. like, they didn't go into the next song.
Right.
And so it seemed like, you know, you're out there.
Mm-hmm.
Can't you find a way to get to, because, and again, this is just like what I like about, especially, well, just when I go to these shows, like I like being surprised by, like, oh damn, where did that come from?
Yeah.
Or, you know, and so when they don't do that, then that's just, I feel like it's a missed.
Yeah,
missed chance.
I think that's fair. Yeah, it kind of stopped because also Reba usually has this ending that's like whistling, where they do this whistling thing, and they didn't do it here. So there was like, there's no reason not to go into the next song, which is a slow, a slow kind of acoustic song.
Right. The Ghost is really nice. I want to listen to that again because that was like, you know, it's like you were talking about on those tapes. Sometimes you kind of just get lost and, you know, and you're not really sure. And it's like, but I do know that I liked it and I wanted to go back to it again.
Yeah. That's my, it's definitely in my top five favorite Phish jams of all time. That Ghost, mostly because of the latter part, the kind of blissful peaks that they get to, is just, man.
Is Ghost a common vehicle for that kind of stuff?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. When it was introduced, so they started playing it in 97. So once it showed up, it was, you know, became and stayed a.
And I apologize that you're staple. Having to go like 101.
No, this is what this is for. Okay. We did the same thing for Fennec. So it's all good.
Okay. Okay, so Down With Disease, that's good. I knew that was, and this is just from my knowledge from back in the day, was, you know, that was like the TV hit, right?
Yeah.
And so then they just decided to start making it 20 minutes every time they played it, right?
Right.
Which is cool.
In this era, there's like, as you can tell, there's a lot of 20-minute...
Down With Diseases.
20-minute everything, you know?
Yeah, right. So that part was good, I thought. And then... I also really like the Johnny B. Goode and Jesus Left Chicago. I like when they play the blues. I mean, is that not a, I don't know.
Yeah, they don't do it very much, but in 97 they played Jesus Just Left Chicago like maybe five or six times. I'm not sure offhand, but several versions were like very, very good. And yeah, you're right. There's especially because Paige is singing, right? So like Paige is not the primary singer, but I think people who are newer to Phish, I took my brother-in-law to a Phish show and he's like a Little Feat fan and likes a lot of good music, but had never listened to Phish. And it was in 2009. And his only real comment after the show was like, they should let the piano player sing.
Yeah. I would agree with that.
So I think that's like a pretty common, because he has a good voice and he can play songs like this, like really, really well.
What is a city without its music?
The legacy of the New York Philharmonic
is incredible. Nearly two centuries of history. That's a lot of music and a lot of stories.
I was sitting on stage for the very first time thinking, I can't quite believe this is happening.
Join me, Jamie Bernstein, as we explore the history of the New York Philharmonic. It's the NY Phil Story Made in New York, a podcast about a city, its people, and their orchestra. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
Jesus Loves Chicago, and he headed down to New Orleans. Jesus Loves Chicago. Working from one end to the other, and all points in between.
When the circus comes, I felt like that was pretty awful.
You did?
Yeah. Is that a song that they play? Is that a good song?
It's a song that they play for sure. I mean,
is it on an album?
No, it's by Los Lobos.
Okay.
They started playing
it. I bet their version's better.
It could be. Sorry. I think they started playing it in 97, but they played it a lot in 97, but... Yeah, I don't know. They were feeling something about the cover.
Maybe I need to go back and listen to it again. I might have just been in a bad mood when I listened to it.
I think it's okay. You don't have to like them all, you know?
Okay. I mean, I like more than you thought I would, right?
Yeah, I think so. And then, you know, as someone who likes songs that cohesive. I'm sure this 24 minute you enjoy myself was
well, right? But I mean, isn't that what's the standard? You enjoy myself is like 12 or 15. I mean,
they're usually about 20 minutes, usually because there's like a 3 to 5 minute vocal jam at the end.
Oh, right.
Right. So you got to have the vocal jam.
How long is the album version?
Oh, good question.
Yeah, I've got so many questions.
12, 14 minutes.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's probably more my.
Yeah.
Or like maybe like 17.
Yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah. This one is like very.
It's not bad. I mean, so here's what I wrote. Some cool jamming in You Enjoy Myself, but I have to admit some of it seems pretty aimless.
Yeah. This is like a different kind of You Enjoy Myself. I think this show is like mostly about the first set, but there's some gems in the second set. Did you, obviously the sound and everything is so much different from the 92 show.
Sure.
And you liked the 92 show more.
I mean, probably.
Yeah.
Like if I'm going to sit down and listen to it, I would probably choose that.
Yeah.
Generally.
Yeah.
Not that I disliked this.
Yeah, yeah.
It just wasn't.
Well, you listened to it, so that's good.
Made it all the way through.
So then we got to the 2017 show. So I noted in my email to Harvey that, of course, the reason I chose this is that they just pulled off this incredible.
Yeah, no, and I mean, I know about the
Baker's Dozen.
Right.
Yeah, it's like, it was hard to
it's
miss
cool.
in
yeah,
the
no,
summer
it's awesome.
Of 2017. And I just think this, you know, when you knew that they were going to do the donut thing, everyone was.
Sorry. I'm sorry. Those are words that we'll never say on the Blue Estate.
Yeah, yeah. So our friend Felicia, actually, who works at Federal Donuts, they provided all the donuts.
Right.
So she had like a cool story about it.
She's a friend of the pod.
She's a friend of the pod. She's a friend of Osiris. She's a friend of all of us.
Cool.
But she got like, anyway, she has cool stories about how all 13 nights of donuts got made and delivered and all that. But
how many of those shows did you go to?
I only saw 4 of the 13. Oh, yeah.
Call yourself a real serious, fan.
I'm a pretty serious noob. so many friends who saw all 13.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Jeez.
Yeah. In like,
you have to live in New York to do that? I mean, that seems like really intense.
Yeah, or relocate for a little while.
Get a job there for a month.
Yeah, the 21st of July until the 6th of August. So
did they take some days off?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, there was like a
break in the middle.
Thursday nights and Monday nights, I think, were the 2 nights off. So
the Panic did, they did 10 nights in Paris in spring of 98. They did at like a little club in Paris, 5 nights, and it took 2 days off and did 5 more nights.
Wow. That's a lot. That's a lot of shows.
And now they did some repeats, but they definitely, you know, that, you know, as far as like a stand, right, that's about as close
as they
get.
Shows?
They're really good.
Yeah.
There's a great episode of the Blues Tape. 2 of them, actually. We did a 2-parter on the
nice.
Paris 98 shows.
Nice. So. Did they do a lot of Europe stuff?
So that was their first time there, was in spring of 98. And then they went back in, I think, the fall of 98.
Yeah.
They did a short run. And then they went back again in 99. And then they were going to go in fall of 2000. And then like 9/11 happened.
Mm-hmm.
And then Hauser got sick.
So this 2017, obviously there's 13 shows. This, I think, what I was going to say about the donuts is people were waiting.
Back to the donuts.
People were waiting for something jam oriented.
Okay, right? Like that was expected.
It was expected because then they would jam, which is all. It's funny because I think in contrast to Panic fans, like it's literally all we want Fish to do is jam.
Well, I don't think that's contrary.
Well, yeah,
I mean,
outside of songs.
Yeah.
Right.
No, I mean, I don't claim to be representative of the fan base. I mean, I'm sure there are folks at Panic shows that would love four song second sets.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's just not really my thing.
Yep.
So,
yeah.
But yeah, no, I totally get that.
Yeah.
I mean, it's awesome.
So people knew that was coming. I mean, these 13 shows, and maybe it's the same for like the 10 shows in Paris you're describing. Like being in one place for so long and being able to be comfortable, and Madison Square Garden is the place where they're the most comfortable. It just led to like, I mean, all 13 nights are really, really, really good shows. So,
which night is this?
Like this fifth? Is the fifth night. Fourth.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So this.
And were you at the show?
I was not.
Okay.
Yeah.
And nobody knew the theme until they walked in, right, and got the donut.
Yeah, you get the donut before the you get the donut before the show.
Okay.
And then you know. Yeah, so they played the Friday, Saturday, Sunday, then took Monday off, and then this is the Tuesday show. Okay. So this is the fourth.
All right.
So what'd you think? What were your takeaways from this?
This was my favorite show.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. That's so great to hear.
And I kind of like to go bigger picture here. Like I do wonder whether like Phish 3.0 is more my speed than definitely Phish 2.0 or like late 1.0.
I think that is,
because, I didn't take a whole lot of notes because I was just listening to it. And I've been listening to it on the road some too. So obviously it's not safe to like take notes while you're driving. But, all right. So here are a few things I did. In Sample in the Jar. So is this, that's a long version of Sample in the Jar.
Yeah.
They don't normally do that.
They usually don't.
So I thought the drop back in was awesome.
Yeah.
And so like, that's what I like, right?
Yeah.
Like do whatever you want to do, but just like, let's get back. And then that's like, that to me is like the money shot,
right?
You know what I mean? Like that is the payoff of like whatever it is you're going to do. And then let's get back in and finish it. So that I thought was awesome.
And I think that was just indicative of how well they were playing over the course of those 13 shows.
So would you say that kind of a jam is the exception? Or is that pretty, it is?
Yeah, definitely. Especially in Sample in a Jar could be an opener at any show, but not where you go completely off script and then find a way back. So,
okay.
Yeah, that's a good point.
I wish that they did that. Not specifically in that song, but just those kinds of jams.
Because
that's really, I mean, I don't know. I feel like to me that's like a Panic style jam.
Yeah.
Like that they,
that,
we're on theme, but we're still within the thing. So, I like that. Lawn Boy was really pretty damn sick.
It's like a pretty crazy 30 minutes.
Yeah. I feel like there are a couple spots where to me it got a little lost. And I mean, again, this is just, I realize that this is what they do.
Yeah.
So it's not really a criticism.
Right.
Just like, and I know they're not lost. It just, I get lost. Right.
Yeah.
And, but I thought for the most part, for it to be a 30 minute jam, it was pretty coherent.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like I don't know if they script that stuff out or,
if
it's just like, let's just jump off.
I think it was, so that's a good, one of the things you said about the 3.0 being your style. I think they, in 3.0, they cycle through a lot more like different themes and approaches and things like more quickly.
Yeah.
In the late 90s and especially in 2.0, it would be just kind of like, it would feel aimless if you weren't into that particular
Like knowledgeable enough to like know where it is going.
Yeah. So like in this Lawn Boy, there's lots of different pieces that were pretty distinct from each other.
Right.
So you could feel like it felt like it was moving along to a different point.
Yeah.
I'm glad you liked it. That's awesome.
No, it was good. So my friend and Stash, I thought were both like pretty chill and badass.
Mm-hmm.
And then, yeah. So that was all really good.
Cool.
The Cross-Eyed and Painless, I was really good with the first 22 minutes of it.
Which is a pretty good place to start.
But then it kind of came back at the end.
Yeah.
It was just like, there was just a spot there.
Yeah.
And, it was just my taste, so.
Yeah.
So Fishman sings that, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's where I got to, does he sing all the covers?
Oh, yeah. Got it. Yep.
And I can say this without sounding like a total dick, because I don't think it is, but like, it doesn't feel like as honoring to the, not that it has to be exactly like, but it feels sort of campy, it's, and maybe not just this one specifically, but to me, a cover is like you're making a statement about either the artist or the song that it has an influence on as a band.
Mm-hmm.
That it has an influence on you and you're going to kind of make your best.
Yeah. Homage to the original.
Right.
Yeah.
And it doesn't have to, it can sound completely different.
Yeah.
But you're making a statement about what it is.
Yeah.
Sometimes it doesn't feel that way.
Yeah. I think Fishman's homage to it is just playing amazing drums.
Yeah. No, and I get that.
But I think you're right. For sure. He has a different, he has a much more straightforward way of singing that's like not, it's more like speaking, mm-hmm. right? Which, right. which Cross-Eyed and Painless does yeah. have that style.
Well, and I, like that's where I almost came back around. It's like, well, I mean, paying homage to Talking Heads kind of like being weird
yeah.
is.
You know, yeah, and it's sort like, of spoken word jamming, you know?
Right. So it's not a criticism.
No, it's a good like question. I hadn't thought about that because it's just like how they've played it forever. But you're right that he kind of comes in on these more unconventional lyrical songs. Like right. he doesn't do a lot of singing of just like traditional songs, you know?
I mean, because Panic plays a bunch of Talking Heads songs. But like they do them with like, you know, they're like earnest, right?
Yeah.
And I mean, they don't sound exactly like the originals, but yeah. it's like they're, you know, JB's doing his best to channel David Byrne. And,
yeah.
You
know, yeah, that's interesting. That's interesting. I'm curious if people listening, what you think about that, because I hadn't actually thought about that before just because I'm so used to them playing cross-eyed like that, but it's a good point. Minute jams and you sort of enjoyed
there.
Them both.
Yeah, no, I yeah. did.
Yeah,
no, I really. I mean, honestly, I did. I enjoyed the show.
Cool.
I mean, I had put on the release that they did.
For yeah.
So is any of this stuff on that?
There's nothing from this night okay. on that release.
Okay.
Yeah.
But there's definitely some long stuff.
Yeah.
And yeah. And I was surprised at how much I liked that.
Yeah. The mixing. Know? I mean, the mixing
it sounds
good.
Amazing.
But I think you're right that there's something about 3.0 that might be a little bit more approachable, even though it's long, longer yeah. jams.
Right, and it's like, I mean, I like jazz, you know, and I think, yeah. honestly, that's what it comes down to. I was talking to a buddy of mine before I came out, and I told him what I was doing.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh, good luck. But he's like, basically, and he's, I mean, he likes Phish, and he's like, Phish is a jazz band, and Panic is a rock band,
huh.
you know?
Yeah.
And it's like, they each have their own take on it,
yeah.
you know what I mean? And like, Phish is a jazz band that plays rock and roll, and yeah. Panic's a rock band that plays some jazz,
yeah.
you know? And,
yeah.
But ultimately, that's what they are.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so it was funny. Rob Turner, I don't know if you yeah. saw, like he tweeted something because there was yeah. some back and forth with,
there was a lot
with
of
you
back
guys.
And forth
and
about
he was like,
Panic.
You know, he's like, Panic at their best is a really great, you know, Southern jam band or
yeah.
something.
Yeah.
Or Southern rock jam band.
Yeah.
And I fixed it as saying, Watchword Panic is a great rock band.
Yeah.
You know, and so it's not, they're not just a jam band and they're not just Southern rock.
Like yeah.
They, you know, they ultimately are a rock band
yeah.
that, you know, has these different influences and that's what they are.
Yeah. So. Yeah. And Phish is much more outside of traditional rock.
Right.
For sure.
Yeah. And they're, yeah. I mean, obviously more classically trained. And,
yeah.
And I don't mean to like boil the whole thing
no,
down
no,
to
no.
something
it's,
like super
I,
simple like
that. I think
that,
it's but. Fair though. And I think that's where you get the difference between like what we talked about on Bluest Tape, where there's, you know, 10 to 15 songs that are all within 5 to 8 minutes, right? With a couple that are outside of
yeah.
that.
Yeah, right? And I mean, yeah, like the longest song you're going to ever see at a Panic show is probably 20 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And that's going to be a more the exception than the rule.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
You know, generally 12 to 18 minutes is going to be about the max.
Right? Yeah, which is still like a long
song. No, it's definitely exploratory, right?
Yeah, right, right.
But anyway, I'm hoping this is more emblematic of the band as its current state than it is of just this run this night.
I think it is.
So that's why I'm saying I'm happy to go.
Cool. We're going to make it happen. And what did you have any other sort of takeaways just going back to listen to Fish intently, maybe for the first time in a while?
No, I mean, just the stark differences of the eras. Mm-hmm. And that's why I really appreciated you showing me all the different, 92, 97, and 17.
Yeah.
And that they all... I'd like to go back and listen to some of that 95 stuff that I was more familiar with back in college.
Yeah.
And see if I like it more or less or what, but, I mean, generally I like a lot of their songs. That's why I like listening to their records, because for the most part, I like the songs. It's just some of the super jams that I just, get a little lost. And, I think there are definitely some songs that I'm just, but I mean, it's going to be the case of any band. I mean, no band, except for Watch Where Panic, is you're going to like every song.
Right. Right?
No, but even then, they've got some piss songs, right? You know, I mean, you got to be able to go to the bathroom every once in a while.
Right,
but,
right.
So, yeah, no, it was good. I'm glad that we did this exercise. It was it was an adventure, and I'm just going to need to figure out ways to sneak this stuff in without bothering my wife.
Yeah, well, when we can, next time we'll do something more, we'll like pick one really crazy jam from each band and go into it or something like that. Yeah. But this has been fun, and I learned a lot about Panic, and I said on Blues Tape, I'm going to go back and listen particularly to the 96, 97 stuff. So
yeah,
thanks for introducing me. So thanks, Harvey, for coming. Stopping by while you're in DC. Thank you for bringing delicious beer from Aslan, which is one of the most amazing breweries out there. If you're coming through Virginia, you gotta get some Aslan.
Yeah.
So thanks.
No, absolutely. It was fun, man. I appreciate you making the time and I hope that I didn't piss too many people off.
I don't think so, but I'm curious. I want to hear people's feedback, and I think you made some really good points about the sound and some of the differences between the years. So, everyone should send us feedback and tweet at Harvey.
Please don't. No, seriously. I mean, come on. I'm a nice guy.
He's very nice. He's just a Widespread Panic fan, right.
And I really hope that it's not. I mean, it seem to me like, I don't want to get too far down this rabbit hole. It seems like Fish fans shouldn't really care about the fact that people like Panic, but it sometimes it does. Know what I mean? And I don't think that Panic fans really care. Like, if they don't like Fish, they don't like Fish, but they're not like pissed at people for saying anything, about what they like. So
it is
It's just my perspective.
I know. We're gonna get some comments about this. So I want people to share. But we're very Widespread Panic friendly in this podcast.
Yeah. And I mean, I just, as long as you'll keep us on, we're like, we're token. In the Osiris Network, but there was actually one other thing that I wanted to talk about that we didn't get into was guest appearances.
Yeah,
so like guests are like a big part of Panic, right? And they like having people up. I mean, they've had Fish Trey has guested several times. Paige has guested several times, and I think we had there was a bit of a Twitter fight about this too. So it's like and maybe it just comes down to the fact that blues based rock is easier to like bring somebody up and like just, jam on than some like, big, piece.
Yeah.
Right? Cause it doesn't seem like Fish has that many, guests.
Yeah, no, they really don't. It's a good point. And that's like partially, I think they're more protective of their music. Like it's more insular in a way, And part of it is like some of the songs, like the compositions and stuff, but that doesn't mean you can't have someone come play Loving Cup or Johnny Be Good or whatever. But they just, it's why they stopped having openers after a while. Like they like doing, Trey likes, I think, just having it be like their, their thing.
Yeah. It's just interesting because it is like the outlier in the quote unquote jam band community, mm-hmm. right? Because like most of those bands like to interact and, freaking Warren Haynes has played with everybody. Has he played with Fish?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Good. He's played with everybody.
Yeah, he's played with them a couple of times, but not for a long time.
Right. And so that was just, that always kind of, that struck me.
Yeah, it is interesting. We've talked about that before in the podcast, just that like there's not a lot of guest appearances. There were more in like the, you know, in the 90s when, when people were touring together, and I think maybe a little bit closer in proximity and that sort of thing. But yeah.
Because I feel like that's like you're kind of, I don't know. I mean, I feel like they're missing an opportunity there, right? Especially if you have like, you know, if you have a group, and I mean, they have like the big country horns. Is that, you know, I mean, like where you have like maybe folks that, that come up every once in a while, and like you have the same group of songs that you can kind of do a different take on. And I feel like that's an opportunity that, you know, is missed, right?
Yeah.
I mean, so anyway.
Yeah, if you're listening, Fish, have some more guests. Have some more guests.
Get Trey back on the phone.
Yeah, I do agree though that is interesting because
and it's just it brings another dynamic into it, right?
And, yeah, you know. I think a lot of Fish fans, people should tweet at us or let us know. I think a lot of Fish fans do not want guests.
Really?
Because they go in to like have this be,
they want to go see Fish,
an immersive experience. You know, like
kind of lame. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I know.
I mean, because they're like, so the thing, like Panic would do these 3-night, like New Year's especially. And New Year's was always a big thing where they would have their friends because they were in Atlanta, right? And so they would have David Blackman or John Keane or Colonel Bruce. Colonel Bruce came out all the time. But then you would usually get at least one night that was just straight Panic, right? Mm-hmm. And so, but that would made it special, right? Mm-hmm. It's like, because you had all these other guests and those were highlights for those nights. But then you had one night that was like, it just balls of the wall Panic, right?
Yeah.
And so that's like, sometimes it makes it special when it's not like that all the time.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, totally. I'm not against it necessarily, as long as it doesn't fuck up my second set, you know? Stick to the encores or something.
Fair.
All right. So this has been Harvey from Bluest Tape as our guest. We hope that everyone enjoyed.
How about I pissed anybody off?
Nah, you're good. Thanks everybody for listening. You guys should send us thoughts and feedback and questions, and give us a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts. If you haven't done that already, we appreciate it. And we'll talk to y'all soon. Keep on rocking.
Hey, this is Steve Choi, host of the Musicians Guild podcast, part of the Sound Talent Media podcast network. Within the four walls of the Musicians Guild, we'll be discussing the habits, idiosyncrasies, experiences, and general psychology of my friends and peers all involved with music in various capacities. Listen and subscribe at soundtalentmedia.com.
Hey, this is Dewey Halpas, host of Peer Pleasure on the Sound Talent Media podcast network. Join me each week as I explore another long-form conversation with one of your favorite musicians, actors, comedians, or creatives. From Chino Moreno of the Deftones, John Gorley of Portugal the Man, to Fat Mike from NoFX and Ian MacKay from Fugazi and Minor Threat, we go all over the map. From Fall Out Boy to Slayer, Peer Pleasure has it all. Check us out now on Sound Talent Media.